Melbourne is regularly finds itself at the top of global lists of the world's most livable cities. Adelaide, Perth and Sydney are often not too far behind. But a new study released today by RMIT questions just how livable our capital cities actually are, particularly when it comes to access to public transport, affordable housing and employment. This study has taken a look at life in Sydney, Melbourne, Perth and Brisbane, and it's found that none of these capitals perform well across that set of indicators. Billy Giles Corti is a professor in urban design and health at RMIT, and she's the chief investigator of this new study. Billy Giles Corti, welcome to Breakfast.
Thank you, Fran.
So every year lately, I think Melbourne's been there at the top of one of these lists for 7 years, our cities are praised internationally for their livability. Your report paints a pretty different picture, though. How do you explain this contrast?
Well, the Economist Intelligence Unit, what they're trying to do is actually decide how much hardship allowance should be given to expats.
So that's aimed at executives who are looking at going to live in another place.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that if you live in inner Melbourne, if you're an executive coming to Melbourne, it's a very livable city. There's no question of that. And all of our cities are the same. And in fact, if you look across all of our cities, as you mentioned, we come out, you know, from a global perspective, very high. Melbourne might top the pops, but in fact, where most of our cities are doing very well. But our question was, what's the distribution of livability across the whole city? And we're trying to look at who are the winners and who are the losers, and how could we increase the entire livability of all cities from the point of view that our population may double by 2050. So this is not a rehearsal. This is actually something as we're actually living this as we speak. And so the question is, how can we maintain our livability over time, particularly this idea of stability? What's one of the main things that comes out in the livability index, whereas you've got cities with stability that gives them a higher rating from an expat's perspective. And I think if you've got inequity in cities, then you start to get instability.
Okay, inequality can contribute to instability. But what are we talking about when we say livability? What are the parameters?
Well, we've defined it. I mean, one thing that we find when we look at across the world, there's a lot of people talking livability, but no one really defines it. So we define it as somewhere that's safe and socially cohesive. It's environmentally sustainable. And yes, it has affordable housing, but there's no point providing affordable housing if it's not linked by public transport, walking and cycling infrastructure to all the things that you need for daily living: access to employment, access to public open space, access to shops and services. So we've taken a broad view in our definition, and from the point of view that this is about the people who live in cities, not about expats coming here to, you know, for a short period of time.
Okay, so on those parameters, safe and socially cohesive, sustainable walkability, what did you find? Let's look at Melbourne, which I think the Economist had Melbourne top of the list for 7 years in a row. How does Melbourne rate on those indicators of yours?
Well, what we find in all capital cities is that there's that in the inner city that we tend to find that we've got good access to most of those things. So we have good access to public transport, good access to employment, good access to public open space. But what we find, and a walkable community. So that's one thing that we see as the underpinning of a good livable community. It's something that's somewhere that's walkable. If you can walk, cycle, use public transport, well, this is a great place to live. And you see that because that puts up the price. But what we see is that when you look across the distribution of the city, that's not distributed equally across the city. So people living on the urban fringe, yes, that's where we're providing affordable housing, but we don't see that those people have access to public transport, they don't have access to local employment, they don't have access to the sorts of things that they need for daily living, so shops and services.
And is there some kind of inevitability about that, though? I mean, you can't really expect every section of a city to have, and the outer fringes, to have access to the jobs necessarily, can you? Because you're not going to have industries necessarily starting up where the new suburbs are.
No, that's true, actually. And I think what we need is actually more, but we do need to focus on how do we distribute employment across the city. We need to have policies in place, which we didn't find, local spatial policies about how you do increase employment across the city. And I think that's really critical, because otherwise, if you know, we're building further and further out on the fringes of cities, then what we find is that, of course, people are spending a lot of time travelling. The other thing is that those environments are not very walkable. So you provide affordable housing without anywhere to walk to, no public transport, and so it doesn't become very affordable living. So once people go out there, they're finding that they are under, surprisingly actually, even though that's where we're providing the so-called affordable housing, a lot of people living on the fringe are actually experiencing a lot of housing affordability stress. And so that was also a surprise to us, is that and they're actually doubly disadvantaged, because they don't have access to employment, they don't have a walkable environment, they don't have good public transport.
That notion of walkability is interesting, because in your report you link it to the housing density, and it seems to me that you're critical of some of the newer outer fringe communities because they're not walkable, because they don't match the city's density targets. Their density is too low. But isn't that part of the reason why some people want to live in these places? They don't want the density. They want the space. They want the quiet. They want the blue sky.
People live in those environments because they it's affordable. So they go there for price purposes. And in fact, when we do surveys of people, the most important reason why people choose where they live is what they can afford. But what we also find is when we ask people, where would you rather live? Most people would rather be able to live near shops and services and to have good public transport. So there's a bit of a mismatch. And I think the trouble in Australia actually is we're still building at very low densities. We're never going to have a walkable. We value walkability, we value livability, which is walkability, I think, is the fundamental of a good livable environment. But actually we don't have the policy frameworks in place to deliver that.
And that's a big issue. And we'll finish on this question, because the really shocking finding, I think, in your report is we don't have the policies in place for much of this. I mean, you praise Perth to some degree for having a policy. I think it is that 60% of the city lives within 40% of public transport. But is it true that our capital cities don't have policies in place for things like public transport targets, density targets, walkability targets, those things?
So in terms of public transport targets, Perth's got the least ambitious policy. It says 60% of dwellings should live within close proximity.
Oh, the least ambitious.
Transport.
Sorry, I thought that was a positive.
They're achieving it, but it's actually the least ambitious. Sydney has the most ambitious. They say 100% of dwellings should live within close proximity to public transport, and there should be a frequent service, which actually is really the ideal policy. Mm. But not very many dwellings in Sydney are achieving that. But we want to encourage ambition. We think that all cities should have ambitious policies and short and medium term targets to try and reach those. Melbourne, for example, its policy is that 95% of households should live within close proximity to public transport, and 70% do. But when you put frequent services there, it starts to drop down. So we would encourage ambition. We think that's really important. The cities with the most ambitious policies are the ones that are actually doing better, and they all vary. Perth's really good because it has a new policy now that densities on the fringe should be 26 dwellings per hectare, and we think this is starting to cook with gas. This is what we're starting to need. It's not high density. It's actually just providing enough density to get, walkable urbanism, shops and services nearby, and good public transport access. And I think that's really critical. I really think people on the fringe deserve that. And I think the development industry could step up here, because there's ways of delivering that in a way that it's very attractive to people. It's just that we need to have some leadership.
A sense of urban community. Billy, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Fran.
Professor Billy Giles Corti is a RMIT urban designer and the chief investigator in this new study, which is called Creating Livable Cities in Australia.